Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 103 of Geektown Radio. I have with me this week Matt.
Hi David, how are you?
I'm all right, how are you?
Good, been in good health for the last couple of weeks, which has continued from the last time I spoke to you. I can't remember which podcast it was on. been in pretty good health. Not sure where it's come from, but it has continued, which is nice and I appreciate it.
Yes, where it should be.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to?
I played a game recently that was in development for 6 years came out in December, but I've just got around to playing it last week or so, or the last couple of weeks. I finished it now. That's Lost Guardian. I don't know if you heard of that or played it at all.
Yeah, I haven't played it. I know the name, but I haven't actually played it.
A way to describe it would be... We have a puppy at this house which doesn't quite listen to you and chooses when it wants to listen to you. It's a bit like if you raise the size of the animal and lower the size of you, make that a game and kind of go from there. Because in Last Guardian, sometimes because you like climb on the guardian, his name is Trico. 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 You climb on him and sometimes he detects where to jump and he does it automatically and you can literally put your controller down. And other times, if there's more than one area available for him to jump to, he will sometimes jump to either the wrong one or somewhere else. So then sometimes you have to tell him where to jump to. So it's a bit like, basically like controlling a digital animal that's bigger than you, one that you have to climb on. It happened to be twice actually where he was jumping downwards to where he was supposed to go, and then I was at the last jump and then suddenly for whatever reason he turned around and jumped all the way back the other way, and that happened twice.
Oh no.
It was just so, and the only way for me to stop it was for me to jump off Tirico and then call him back and then get back on him and then command him to go where he was going. There's clearly some like AI kind of problems.
Yeah, it's such a shame with games that, you know, as you say, 6 years in development and there are still issues with the AI in it. That's such a shame because it can really destroy it. You know, what should be a great game by just not having the controllers working correctly.
Yeah, you could kind of tell it was meant for the PS3, but just missed the generation, and then they were still working on it, and then it was caught in between, you know, like when the new consoles come out, and it's sort of in between generations, and then they obviously decided to push it a couple more years, and then finally release it on the PS4. A bit like what's happening with Zelda. That was supposed to be a Wii U game and it's actually coming out on the Wii U and the Switch, so it's a bit of that kind of situation. That was fun and frustrating. I sent out one or two frustrating tweets about that, which was good because you can take screenshots with the PlayStation and then you can tweet them straight out. So it's not like take a photo with your phone and then you tweet it out. You can do it directly from the PlayStation, which is really good.
That's good.
Yeah, so in the power of the share button, I can do a lot of things.
Yeah.
Played The Order 1886. I'm currently playing that until Horizon Zero Dawn comes out tomorrow.
Right.
I'm not sure if I'll be able to get it tomorrow or within the next week or so. It's on its way, so we'll see when it turns up. The Order was, I think it was released the year after the PS4 came out, so it was kind of an early sort of, this is what the PS4 can do, but it's sort of in the early stages kind of thing.
Yeah.
Have you played that?
I haven't, no, because I saw the reviews for it weren't particularly good. So I didn't bother. How is it? Are you enjoying it?
It's pretty good. Yeah, the shooting sequences are pretty good. The cutscenes are quite cinematic. It's quite good. There's some interesting different weapons that you get kind of handed to you, and you meet some different engineers and stuff, and they give you different weapons that you try out. And you actually meet this character who's like, I'm really honored that you're trying my weapons, and like, because you're like this special ranger and stuff like that. So it's quite fun. It's apparently quite short, and I don't know how long I've actually played of it. So yes, should be finished with that soon, and then I can move on to Horizon.
Yeah,
what else do I have? Yeah, this Nintendo Switch is out on Friday, so that's quite interesting. Have you had any look at it at all?
I have. I've avoided the Nintendo pretty much since the original Wii. I mean, I've got an Xbox and I've got a PlayStation now. I doubt I will be buying the Switch.
Okay.
Just because, I mean, I know Zelda's supposed to be very good. That's been getting some really good reviews.
Yeah, that's clearly there. Like, look, we have Zelda.
Yeah.
And then, do you remember? We have Zelda. Yeah. And then, wait, do you remember? We have Zelda.
So that wears out. Look, we have Mario. Yeah, it's a lot of money to spend on basically one game, you know, a console to play one game.
Yeah, so it's not launching with very much at all. It's got the 1-2 Switch and ARMS, which I'm not interested in. It's got Mario Kart and Mario, the new Super Mario game, out in a couple of months. But yeah, that, it's clearly like Zelda's supposed to be the game that you're supposed to play for a couple of months or whatever. Yeah. It's kind of ideal for me because I've been in a few situations even this month as well where I've been in either in my dad's car or on the bus, and I've just been thinking like, I could be playing on the Switch right now if I had it, because we drove down to my uncle's on Sunday to watch the Man United in the cup final, and then in the car on the way there and on the way back, I just kept thinking like, we're in the car for like 20-30 minutes, and I was thinking like, yeah, I could be playing Zelda right now on the Switch, but
for me, it's very rare that if I go somewhere I'm not driving, so you know, there's not a huge amount of time when I would be out of my house wanting to game, so I don't really see the point in it for me.
Okay, because you're the one driving the car.
Yeah, because I'm driving the car most of the time.
Be too dangerous. Yeah, but like I said, I get in those situations where I'm like, I've either gone to town with my family and I'm on the bus and I could be playing it there, and other different situations. So it's definitely more ideal for somebody like me, but I'll see when I can get one. I watched a comedy called Superstore. I don't know if you've heard of it before.
I have. I haven't seen it, but
it's pretty good. It's from one of the writers of The Office. Of course, The Office I've mentioned, I was a big fan of.
Yeah.
So it's from one of the writers of them, and it's not really the same like a mockumentary thing. It's more sitcom.
Yeah.
But it's still the same kind of fun people in a office space. But instead of a office, it's a supermarket. So it's kind of the same premise, but just in a different place.
Yeah.
Then of course, when you're in the shop, you've got all this room to like maneuver the characters rather than having them in an office just like sitting at desks. They're like walking around doing different things. So yeah, that's been really good. It's kind of filled the void of the office nicely, so I've enjoyed that. What else? Watched the Netflix film called iBoy, which was quite good.
Oh yeah,
it's sort of like a sly superhero film without being Marvel or DC or anything like that.
Interesting.
Did you watch that?
I haven't seen it yet. It's come up. I've just not had time. It's been recommended. So
it's got Maisie Williams in it. She plays a like schoolgirl sort of teenager character. So it's you know, her age kind of thing. It's not like a Carl situation.
Yeah.
In Walking Dead. So that was really good as well. He's got some. I like the way his powers develop and things like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, lastly, House of Cards, which I'm almost caught up with. I got 4 episodes left. Because what I do is I watch one on Tuesday, one on Wednesday, one on Thursday, if I can. Which the last two times I've gone to do that, I've been able to. And then I listened to a podcast for it that they did the episodes in threes. So then I sort of watched 3 episodes, listened to a podcast, and 3 and then a podcast. And then they did, you know, the last 3 and then the finale. So it's just the next 3, a podcast, and then the finale, and then another one. So, and then it'll be the wait to May 30th. So
yeah,
looking forward to that.
Cool.
Just one last thing. Did you see the Orphan Black teaser?
Yes, I have. Yeah. It doesn't give an awful lot away, to be honest, which is why I didn't post it. But
that's why it's a teaser. It's tease you. Yes,
yes, it's a very, very, very small teaser of it, but it's sounding a bit ominous and sounding like some of the clones may not make it to the end, which is sort of expected. But
I'm surprised that more of them haven't died.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think they're kind of saving that maybe for this last season.
Yeah,
especially with Cassima. Kind of surprised with that as well.
Yes, yeah. She's been sick for basically since season one. So
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I've been up to. What have you been doing?
Gaming-wise, I'm still on Elite Dangerous Horizons. I've been playing that pretty much constantly. That's been the only game I've been on. I've just bought myself a new ship. I've got an Asp Explorer. So it's tough making money in that game, but I'm starting to get to a point where I can get further out into the, you know, further reach systems, and I can take more passengers, so I can do trips out to take passengers out into the further reaches of the galaxy. That tends to earn quite a lot more money, so that's quite good fun.
I've heard of Elite Dangerous. It sounds a bit like, from what you're describing, it sounds like Mass Effect but without the exploring out of the ship.
Well, you're not out of the ship. You're entirely inside the ship at the moment anyway. At some point they are planning to set it up so you can get out and walk around and add a sort of FPS thing into the game. At the moment they can't do that. They're just releasing a new update to it, which is due any day now, that will allow multiple captains to be in one ship, so you can have one person flying and one person controlling the guns and stuff. So they're also, you can have somebody, if you're in a big enough ship, you can have fighters within the ship that kind of drop out, so one person can be controlling the fighter as well. It's quite good fun. It's very rare. I mean, I'm playing in open play, but it's very, very rare that you actually see other people, because, you know, space is quite large. And I mean, there are quite a lot of players.
No Man's Sky.
Yeah, exactly. It's an enormous, enormous world, well, universe that you're flying around in. So there's a lot of kind of undiscovered places. You can trade stuff. I mean, Elite is the ultimate daddy trading game. I mean, it's been around since the days on the Spectrum. So, you know, it's been around a very, very long time. And I mean, it's good fun if you like those sort of flying games anyway. So you can trade and you can fight pirates and, you know, all that sort of good stuff. So, okay.
What have you got that on the PC?
Yeah, I've got that on the PC. It is available on the Xbox, I think, as well.
I've seen it floating around on there. So,
yeah. So you can get it on the Xbox, but yeah, I mean, I'm playing it on PC because I've got a full kind of joystick setup for it.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, you know, joystick with thrust controller and that sort of stuff. So I bought that for it. So that's really good fun. I like those games. That's sort of keeping me going until Mass Effect comes out, which is next month.
Yeah, I think it's 24th. It's at the end of March. There's a lot happening in March. So
yeah, it's
24th, something like that.
23rd. Yeah, 23rd that comes out. So I am looking forward to Mass Effect, but this will keep me going for now. It's a good thing to be able to jump in and out of as well. So yeah, you can leave it for a while and then come back.
So in March, you've got Horizon Zero Dawn, Logan, the new X-Men film, the Nintendo Switch, and Mass Effect. So.
Oh, mentioning Logan, actually, I've just discovered, I haven't been to see it yet, but I've just discovered that they've converted the cinema at the Cineworld in Broad Street in Birmingham, and a few of the others around the country, actually, so it's worth checking out. They've converted them to 4DX cinemas. Do you know what 4DX is?
No.
4DX is basically, it's a cinema where they have rigged it up so things like the chairs rumble and move, and if it like snows on screen, it will snow in the theatre.
Oh, God.
And they've got things that will kind of, you know, if you're flying through the air, they'll kind of blow air in your face and stuff. So it's all rigged up into this kind of, you know, you get this extra dimension, hence the 4DX thing.
Okay. That'd be good with some VR films as well.
Yeah.
Add to it even more.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, that would be good. VR would be the next thing, I'm sure. But at the moment, they're specifically kind of written for the movies. It's not like done it automatically. They specifically have a kind of VX track which is written just for each different movie. It's not like picking it up off sound or anything like that. So it's all tailored for the actual film. Nice. I'm not sure whether there's one near you, but it's worth looking up. It may only be in Cineworld at the moment. So if you've got Cineworld near you, go and have a look on the website, see if you can find one near you. But they've apparently converted the one in Birmingham. So I'm going to go and have a look at that. But Logan was one of the films that they had on the list. So I will see if I can go and see that in 4DX and see what it's like.
Nice. I'll look that up before I go and see Logan, actually. So, yeah. If there is one.
Yeah, they seem to be dotted around the country. They were in London, but they seem to be kind of dotted about now. So you know, have a look. TV-wise, SSGB came on the TV, last week, the week before, I think. So that's the alternative history show on the BBC, which is sort of a bit like A Man in the High Castle, but set in Britain.
Oh, okay.
So it's set during Nazi occupation, though the Nazis have won Battle of Britain. It's basically a detective drama, pretty much, but you're following somebody who is in Scotland Yard. He's a detective in Scotland Yard, and he's kind of been forced to work with the Nazis and the secret police, and they're chasing down people who are rebels. And at the base of it, it's sort of a noir detective series, and it's very well written and very well put together. The Nazi occupation stuff adds a little extra dimension to that, but at its core, it's pretty much your standard kind of noir detective series. So that's worth checking out if you like that sort of thing. It's worth having a look at. Other new shows, Lucky Man was back this week as well, so I caught up with that. Pretty much the same sort of thing as the first series, although they started off with Harry desperately trying not to use the luck of the bracelet because he's worried about what will happen to his family, because there's this whole idea that luck tries to balance itself out. So if he uses the bracelet to do something extraordinarily lucky, there will be a negative effect, which may be kind of trying to, you know, give his daughter an illness or something.
Okay, so like he does something cool or like lucky, and then it kind of has like a bad effect on him.
Yes, sort of, so it could have a bad effect either on him or on more likely on somebody close to him. So that's the premise. But then actually they've introduced a new character this season who has also got a lucky bracelet and has had it for a lot longer than Harry. And he's basically saying they're lying to you about this whole luck balancing it out thing, and it's all in your head. She basically seems to be saying, if you think you're going to have bad luck, you'll have bad luck. They've not fully explained that yet. That seems to be the premise of where they're kind of going, of her teaching him how to use the bracelet seems to be the sort of next step, being able to use the bracelet without suffering the negative effects of it. So it's good to have that back. It was a really strong season, the first season, so I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of that. Homeland as well, I think he's trundling along really nicely. You've been watching Homeland.
Yeah, I think they're taking it. Obviously, they probably couldn't help because of some sort of US break, I'm guessing, but having the week break after that explosion kind of killed the momentum a little bit.
Yeah.
Like I watched it yesterday. And once I kind of got into the episode a bit more, like it was sort of 20 minutes in, I thought, okay, the momentum's like back a bit more. But that was kind of I get it. You like want people to wait and for the cliffhanger and stuff, but like with the cliffhanger and that. But
it's a pain, the American scheduling, but you know, what can you do?
Like last week when they had just, I think it was Supergirl and Arrow and Flash and Legends.
Yeah. Yeah. Flash and Legends went off. That was cool. A bit
we
weird.
Still had some superhero shows in that. But it was a bit odd.
Yeah. That was a little weird that not all of them went off, but you know. So yeah, there was those.
What do you think of Quinn this season?
I quite like what they're doing with Quinn. I did wonder whether we're going to get the old sort of Quinn back, but I quite like how
we got a bit of that this week.
You are like, you do get a bit of it, and you know he's struggling with PTSD, and they're blaming a lot of his actions on that. But
Carrie clearly goes up to that officer and goes, look, this guy's got like
severe PTSD.
PTSD, and he like ignores her basically. That's basically what he does, and then they just storm the place anyway. And I'm like, yeah, you don't just ignore a condition like that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you don't. The police
like
that were surrounding that.
Cold or something.
Yeah, the police that were surrounding that were idiots. But yeah, I think they're handling that as a storyline, it's been handled very well. And he was right. So I like where they're going with that. I think it's going to vindicate Quinn as well, which is good. 24, next episode of that. Now, we won't talk too much about 24 because we have a separate 24 podcast, which me and Matt do. You can find on Entertainment Talk.
Yes, we do.
So what do you think so far?
I like it. Yeah, it's just a case of kind of accepting the fact that Jack is very unlikely to be in this season.
Yes.
And that at least we have this version of 24.
Yeah.
I would rather have this than nothing at all, definitely. Mm. I think Eric Carr has been a great character and has been a welcome change in a way. Not as in like Jack Bauer was boring or anything, because he's certainly not, but like he's a different type of character and he's a different, you know, Jack was a C2 agent and Eric is a
Army Ranger.
Yeah, so it's a nice different change of pace, but the same area of kind of work.
I'm enjoying it. It still feels very, very much like 24. I think they're doing a really good job with it. And you don't miss Jack that much at all, really. So I think they're doing a great job with it. And I'm enjoying that. It's on Fox if you want to go and catch up with that.
Yeah. Still got the clock, still got the real time.
Yeah.
All that good stuff. Still got like Howard Gordon and all those people.
Yeah. Manny Cato. So, it's good. So the thing I watched this week was the Oscars. Now, the Oscars, in actual fact, I mean, there was one event, obviously, that massively overshadowed the entire thing. But as an overall show, because I started watching it on Sunday night and it got to about 2:30 in the morning, I thought, no, I've got to go to bed.
Oh, God.
So yeah. I got up the next morning thinking, well, I'll go and watch it. And, of course, looked at my phone the first thing and a bloody BBC News alert had popped up saying Moonlight wins Best Picture. So I was like, okay, fine. And swiped it away and didn't really read the whole story. So I swiped it off because I didn't really want to see any more than I'd already seen.
Yeah.
So stayed away from the news, went downstairs and watched the rest of the ceremony. And then, of course, it gets to the end. And Warren Beatty's up on stage with Faye Dunaway and they're reading out Best Picture and he announces La La Land. And I'm kind of thinking, oh, well, that's weird. I'm sure they said, but yeah, my phone was a bit different. And so I was sort of watching. I didn't see it live. I saw it the next morning, but without knowing the events, and then saw this horror unfold where basically, I mean, what appears to have happened is Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway had come out. It was the 50th anniversary of Bonnie and Clyde, which is why they were presenting the award. So they come out. Warren opens the envelope, looks a bit puzzled and kind of checks inside the envelope again. And he's kind of stalling a little bit and kind of looking around. He then does something which is a little bit of a dick move because he's kind of reading it. And although I think he maybe did it he hands it to Faye Dunaway to read the name out. And I think he partly did that to see whether she would do it, whether she actually agreed with it. She just looked at it, saw La La Land and read it out. And what had happened was they had given him the wrong envelope and it was the envelope for Best Actress, which was Emma Stone, La La Land. And the card had said Emma Stone, La La Land. So they read it and then all the La La Land guys get up on stage and they're giving speeches. And then somebody had obviously come out of the back and said, no, you've got it wrong. They haven't won. And the producer for La La Land comes to the front, makes a bit of a speech and goes, by the way, we lost. Moonlight actually won Best Picture. We're not joking. This is absolutely genuine. They made a mistake. Warren Beatty's now got the right card and he takes the card off Warren and holds it up to the camera and goes, Moonlight, Best Picture. So then the Moonlight guys have to come up on stage and then it was just kind of chaos. Entirely the fault of PricewaterhouseCoopers, who are the guys that are the accountants for it and the auditors for the entire event. They've entirely taken responsibility. They basically have two envelopes. They have a main envelope and a backup envelope. So Emma Stone actually still had her envelope, which said she won, but somehow the backup envelope had got mixed up with the Best Picture envelope. So he got given that when he went out on stage and chaos ensued. So yes,
right. Yeah,
it's entirely embarrassing. It's interesting to go and watch, but it is cringeworthy watching it. But it's such a shame because the rest of the ceremony was very, very good. Jimmy Kimmel was absolutely fantastic. The stuff between him and Matt Damon was absolutely hilarious because for those that don't know, him and Matt Damon have this kind of mock feud going on between the pair of them. So they're always taking the mickey out of each other. Jimmy always lays into Matt whenever they see them. So there were little things like when Ben Affleck and Matt Damon come up to present an award, they announce him as Ben Affleck and guest instead of Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. So there was that. And when Matt's trying to introduce the nominations for the award, that, you know, they have the playoff music when somebody goes on too long. Mm-hmm. They brought up the playoff music when he's just trying to announce the nominations for the award, and they're bringing up the playoff music, and then they pan the camera down to the orchestra pit and it's Jimmy Kimmel conducting the orchestra. You know, so there were some lovely little bits there in that. Some great gags between the pair of them, and he was funny throughout. I think he did an absolutely fantastic job. It's just such a shame the way that ended.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think the highlights. In fact, the whole ceremony.
Yeah,
is
I watched
probably
a couple of highlights on YouTube.
Yeah, the highlights are up on YouTube, and certainly the clip of the end bit is on YouTube. So worth going to watch if you've not seen it.
They also had the mistake of they did the in memoriam, and I don't know whose name it was, but they showed somebody's name, and apparently the person is actually alive.
Yes, it was. What they did was I think a set designer. It was a set or a costume designer, and they put up her name. And she had genuinely died. The problem is the picture they used was of one of her partners who was very much still alive. So they got the right name, but the wrong picture. which is really, really unfortunate. I'd just be heartbreaking for the person who is the actual friend whose picture they used. So, because it sort of implies that she was, you know, although she made it onto the list, people didn't really know who it was. So that's not cool.
No.
So that was very unfortunate. They also missed some really big names off that list. You know, Alan Rickman wasn't on there. David Bowie wasn't on there. And David Bowie not being on there is quite bad considering Prince was on there. And David Bowie arguably has acted a lot more than Prince ever did, you know. So I think, yeah, that was quite wrong. There was a few other notable names that they missed out as well. So, they needed to do a bit more with that. That was very badly put together, the in memorandum thing. But, you know, all that aside, I think the whole ceremony until the final moments went okay. But yes, there were a few missteps along the way. And the last thing I wanted to mention was Bill Paxton, who sadly passed away on Sunday. He is the only man to have been killed by an alien, a Terminator, and a Predator in film. He was in, I think the first thing I remember him from is Weird Science. He played the older brother in Weird Science, but he was in Titanic. He was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., of course, the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
He was also the lead in the Training Day TV series, which is the remake sort of TV series of Training Day. I mean, that hadn't been doing particularly well in the ratings, but definitely won't be coming back for a second season now.
No.
Just such a shame, because he was, what, 60, 61, 62, something like that?
I think 62.
Very young for somebody to pass away. Apparently some complications with the surgery he had. Such a real shame. He was in Twister, he was in Apollo 13, you know, some amazing movies, and genuinely seemed like a really nice guy from all the tributes that have been coming in. So, yeah. So real shame to lose somebody like that. So I think that's all the general stuff from this week. We can move on to some film and TV news.
Cool.
First story that we have this week, USA Network in the US are apparently considering a Suits spin-off. Do you watch Suits?
I don't.
Oh, okay. No. So you're aware of the show, though. It's basically started off being about a law firm. And they hire a guy who has an eidetic memory, who isn't actually a lawyer, but basically has passed the bar a number of times because he used it as a way of paying his way through college. He sort of, you know, was paid by people to take exams and stuff, although technically he's not a lawyer himself. And the series has been going for 5 seasons. It's now got to the point where he was revealed as being a fraud, having worked at this law firm. And he sort of wondered where they were going to go from there. But one of the things that happened in the current season, it was the season six mid-season finale, Gina Torres, who played Jessica, who was the senior partner at the law firm, left, and her character went off to Chicago for a new start with her boyfriend, Jeff Malone, who's another Whedon alumni, played by DB Woodside. So it was sad to see that character go, because Gina Torres from Firefly, we love Gina. She's a fantastic actress. One of the reasons that apparently she left was because because due to some sort of family things, she needed to spend more time at home in LA, and they shoot suits in Toronto. That's kind of quite a trek from Toronto to LA on a regular basis. So she decided she wanted to leave and try and get more work directly in LA. They've now said that they've been talking to her about doing a spin-off show based around her character in the show, based around Jessica Pearson. The only caveat she had to that was they would have to shoot it in LA because that was the whole point of her leaving in the first place. Right. And they basically said that the producer, who the showrunner, is a guy called Aaron Korsh. She'd said if it had been shot in LA, she'd be on the show forever. And if he'd had his way, she'd be in it forever. So there is a definite desire to go back and do more.
That's good.
It's whether they can kind of pull something together for that. The only difficulty is if they do that, where they actually left her character, which was going off to Chicago to be with her boyfriend, that storyline would have to come to an end, because my guess is they'd either have to leave her in Chicago but make LA sit in for Chicago, which is not impossible. I mean, you know, that's perfectly easy to do.
Yeah.
They shoot in Toronto, but Suits is set in New York. So, you know, I mean, it's not exactly difficult.
Yeah, things like that have happened before.
Every single CSI, no matter where it was set, was all shot in LA. You know, so, I mean, it's something that's fairly common. The bigger problem you've got is DB Woodside is now a series regular on Lucifer, which he wasn't before. So he would, obviously, you would expect him to play a major part if they're going to follow her life as they left it set up. So they would have to kind of time jump it forward a bit and maybe have her in a different situation so they can explain the absence of DB Woodside's character. So I don't know what they would actually do, but I would be very happy to see more of that character, because Gina Torres is fantastic. She's a great actress. The show's great. I'm always up for having more Suits if possible.
Cool. Good.
It's one to go and watch if you haven't caught up with it. It's a really well put together show.
Okay. Well, what I might do is I check out some trailers or something and
see what I think from there. It's very funny and very well put together.
I mean, there's a couple of things coming to an end this year, so I might free up a little bit of space. There's things like Fargo, Leftovers, and Broadchurch on their final seasons. So
yeah. So give you a bit more space to do stuff. Next news story we've got is Game of Thrones. Ewan Rheon is being cast in the Marvel's Inhuman series. Ewan Rheon has played a superhero before because he was in Misfits, but
he was, yeah.
Of course, he is best known as Ramsay Bolton, the son of Roose Bolton, who was just an horrendous character on Game of Thrones.
Yep, you could say he was noticed.
yeah, just an appalling character. He's going back to basically playing a superhero, although he's pretty much as mad as Randy Bolton by the sounds of it. He's playing a character called Maximus the Mad, which, you know, so clues in the name. In the Marvel's Inhuman series, Maximus is the younger brother of Black Bolt, Black Bolt being the kind of main lead, who is the ruler of the Inhumans. He's described as a clever and charming Inhuman that's fiercely devoted to the people of Atalan, especially his brother the King, although he harbours an intense desire to wear the crown himself. So it's a bit like he's sort of Loki to Black Bolt's Thor, I guess. That seems to be the kind of setup.
Right. Right. Yeah, I'm pretty excited for this. So it's great. It's a great person that they cast in this. I think there was somebody else they cast in it before who was pretty good, but I can't remember their name. But I'm pretty looking forward to it.
Yeah. Super good. It's looking like a good series. Maximus was exposed to, as an infant, to the Terrigen Mist, which is the thing that sort of turns them into Inhumans. He had no outward signs of mutation. However, it did give him psychic abilities, but he chose to hide them from the rest of the Inhuman population. So he's kind of very manipulative and secretive. He's got this psionic power and an extraordinarily gifted inventor with a superhuman intellect, an advanced knowledge of physics and mechanics and biology. So yeah, very, very intelligent character, apparently. It's a really interesting one for him to play with. you know, and we know he can do these kind of evil, mad characters quite well.
Yep, he
so, yeah. So it's a really good bit of casting.
He can play the kind of quiet person and the really evil, loud person, because his character in Misfits, well, he had some good character development, because he was pretty quiet at the start, and then he got these this power and stuff, and then he became a like really big character in the show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's got a little range to him.
Yeah, so I think this is a really good bit of casting. The show is being run by the guy called Scott Buck, who has just come off the back of doing Iron Fist. You know, he's a solid pair of hands to run for
okay,
it.
Good.
It's going to be on ABC in the US on from the 26th of September. It's only got 8 episodes in the first run. The first 2 episodes are also being strung together in IMAX for showing on IMAX cinemas. Yeah, they're going to be broadcast before the terrestrial broadcast, and they're stringing them together kind of like a movie to be shown in purely in IMAX cinemas. It's also not being seen as a spin-off from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is interesting, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. obviously uses Inhumans quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And it's ABC and Marvel and that, so.
Yeah, and I mean, it's still ABC, so I mean, they're saying it's going to be a separate entity, although I suspect it will be still be tied into the universe.
Yeah, but I think it would be kind of like one of them loosely tied in things.
Yeah, they're just sort of saying it's not going. You're not going to see, I don't think, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. characters directly cross over.
I see them 22 episodes a year, so
yeah,
exactly. I think I'm okay.
I think yes, I think that's fair. Yeah, you're not going to see Inhumans characters come across. I think this is very much a different set of Inhumans, set in a very different place. So we don't have a UK pickup for this yet. I suspect it will get picked up at some point, but no news yet. It's a bit early for that. I'm hoping that the IMAX over here will also show it as well.
Oh, yes,
that would be good.
That'd be pretty good,
because they haven't really made that clear right now. So I'm hoping that it will be worldwide IMAX. But
September's also still a fair bit away. So
we've got a bit of time.
It'll be here before we know it. So
there's a bit of time before that comes in. Mm. Sticking with superheroes, it's 2 bits of news. Batman has officially got a new director.
Finally,
the Batman has got a new director, and there's also a Nightwing movie in development.
Yes. So,
which is awesome news. So, first of all, the Batman director is, I think we probably mentioned a while back, Ben Affleck has stepped down from directing the Batman standalone movie, basically because I think he decided that it was going to be too much work being in the cape and cowl and then being behind the camera as well. It was quite a lot to deal with.
Was he writing it as well?
Yes, and he's been writing
it's a lot
of work. So there is quite a lot going on there.
He's got Justice League to be in as well, so
yeah. And I mean, there have been rumors floating around that he actually wants to stop playing Batman as well, but how true those are, I don't know. He certainly, when the new director, who's a guy called Matt Reeves, when Matt Reeves was announced as the new director, he did send a tweet out saying welcome to the Batcave. So that doesn't sound like somebody who wants to stop being Batman, but
yeah.
You know, Matt Reeves, if you don't know the name, he was started off working with J.J. Abrams on Felicity, the TV show. He directed Cloverfield, Let Me In, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and directed the upcoming War for the Planet of the Apes, all of which were really great films. So, you know, a good deal, you know, good deal of CGI stuff and great stories. So I think it's a really good pair of hands to put the film into. He's commented that he's been in love with the Batman story since he was a child, said he's such an iconic and compelling character and one that resonates with me deeply. I'm incredibly honored and excited to be working with Warner Brothers to bring this epic and emotional new take on the Caped Crusader to the big screen. So he seemed quite psyched about it.
Mm. Yes. Oh, we got Deathstroke in there as well, haven't we?
Yes, Deathstroke seems to be certainly one of the major villains. We don't know whether it's Affleck's script that's being used or not, or whether it's going to be rewritten in some way. I mean, that may be the other reason why Affleck stepped away. Maybe Warner Brothers didn't like the script he was going for, but I don't know. It's a tricky situation, particularly as the guy's the star as well. So,
I reckon he'll still have some input into it, certainly.
I'm sure
look at
he
the script
will.
And say, we'll take these parts out of it and then I'll add my own thing in here.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully they still stick with it, and, you know, it's something that they're all happy with, I would hope.
Mm. Now all we need is a Bat family-related TV show and I'll be happy.
Yes, yeah, I'm... yeah. Yeah, it's a shame that that hasn't come along yet, but we are getting a Bat Family related movie, which is Nightwing. Apparently, yes. there is a Nightwing film in development. Nightwing, for those of you that don't know your Bat history, Nightwing is Dick Grayson. Dick Grayson being the original Robin. There have actually been five in total, in current continuity anyway. So Dick Grayson's the original Robin. He basically goes on to become Nightwing after he ditches the Robin persona and sort of comes out from under Batman's shadow.
And then he goes to protect, I think it's Bloodhaven.
He goes to Bloodhaven. He's moved around a bit. I'm not sure. I don't think he's in Bloodhaven in the current books. But yes, Bloodhaven is certainly where he's majorly associated with. I mean, Dick Grayson has been Nightwing since 1984. So, you know, he's been that character for a very, very long time in the books. And certainly more, anybody that's read the more modern books think of Dick Grayson as Nightwing over being Robin. And there's a lot of people saying, well, how can they do Nightwing when they haven't introduced a Robin in the films? But they have. They have introduced a Robin in the films in the current continuity, albeit a very dead one, but he was in the films because we saw the Robin suit with the ha 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 thing written over it.
Yeah, yeah. So
what's interesting for that is that Robin, it wasn't entirely clear who that was, although I think a lot of people assume that was Jason Todd, who was Robin number two, because he was the one that was killed in the books. That seems to be the case if they're now thinking about doing a Nightwing movie, which means that they could also introduce a Robin as well, because they could introduce Robin number three, who is probably one of the better known ones these days, which is Tim Drake, who is somebody that comes to Batman, sees Batman going down a very dark path, and comes to Batman and argues that Batman needs a Robin to balance out the sort of light and dark. So Tim Drake's a far more interesting character out of those as well. I would also be quite happy if they introduced Damian Wayne as well, because Damian Wayne's a brilliant Robin, who is the son of Bruce and Talia al Ghul. He's the current Robin.
Okay, yeah, that was the one thing I couldn't quite clearly remember, but yeah.
Yeah, Damian Wayne's the current Robin in the books, and he's a wonderful, wonderful character, because he's kind of, well, was raised by the League of Assassins, so he's not your normal child. He's sarcastic, and there is a slight cruel streak to him, but he refers to Alfred isn't Alfred, he's Pennyworth. You know, he kind of sees everybody else as being below him. He's been raised by, you know, Ra's al Ghul and Talia al Ghul. So, you know, he's not a normal kid in any way, shape or form. But he's a wonderful, wonderful character. And he actually first becomes Robin at the point where, in the books, where Dick Grayson is actually playing Batman because Bruce has disappeared. So you had this weird dynamic where Batman was actually the lighter character and Robin was actually the darker character. That was a lovely, lovely dynamic. And that's also something that's quite interesting with a Nightwing movie, is if Ben is making noises about not wanting to be Batman anymore, it's distinctly possible that whoever you cast as Nightwing, if Bruce gets killed off or, you know, decides to stop being Batman at some point in the films, i.e. Ben doesn't want to do it anymore, rather than recasting Bruce for somebody else, it does then put you into the position of you could shift whoever they cast as Nightwing into the Batman outfit.
So
it gives them a decent in-movie continuity, which they wouldn't have otherwise. So I think it's a really interesting choice for a standalone film.
Yeah. Who do you think they could cast as Nightwing? There's rumors of like Steven Yeun to like Zac Efron.
Yeah, so. I'd seen Zac Efron being mentioned. I mean, it needs to be somebody probably, you know, mid-20s. He needs to be somebody that's kind of young, good-looking, obviously very fit. There's a lot of things about Nightwing's backside, because there are gratuitous butt shots in a lot of the books, because he is wearing a very tight-fitting lycra kind of suit. So, yes, there's a lot of things about, well, as long as he has a good ass, you know. so there's a lot of the tweets that I saw. But, yeah, I think, you know, Zac Efron, I think, would actually be an interesting pick for it. I think he's quite a good choice. I don't know. I don't know who else you could pick. But, yeah, I think it just needs to be somebody who's in that kind of, you know, that age range of sort of mid-20s, just very fit, very good-looking, charming, funny, because that he's really who Dick Grayson is. He's a much lighter character. He's not dark. He's not brooding. He's far lighter and far more, you know, I think it could be really interesting to add that into that whole Bat universe. It also gives you an opportunity to bring in people like Barbara Gordon as well, either as Batgirl or
Batgirl and all that little stuff.
Yeah.
You can do Oracle and...
Yeah, I mean, that would be an interesting thing to do on screen, to do that sequence of Barbara getting shot and becoming Oracle.
That would be pretty cool to have like a killing, a live action killing joke film.
Yeah.
Did you see the animated one?
Yes, I saw the animated one that has that weird thing about Bruce and Barbara getting it on a rooftop, which was a bit weird. But it's very much a film of two halves. The bit that follows the book in that animated film is great. The other bit of it is okay, but not brilliant. So, you know, it also gives you a chance to introduce Birds of Prey as well if you bring in Barbara. So
yeah, there's plenty of things you can do. You can do the whole Red Hood thing and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, Jason Todd. I mean, you know, I'm as you probably know, I'm a huge fan of Red Hood. So I would like to see Jason Todd brought in as well. I think that would be interesting.
Yep, superhero films are going to be around for a while.
Yes, it's nice to see them start to expand the Bat family on screen, which is something they've never ever done before. So, you know, I want to see that. That's the end of the news for this week. Next up, we have an interview.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The interview this week is with the author Lev Grossman, who written various novels, but the thing he's probably most famous for is The Magicians. He's an American New York-based novelist and journalist. He released his first novel, which was called Warp, in 1997. His second was called Codex in 2004, which became an international bestseller. However, it's The Magicians, which is the work he's probably best known for, which was published in 2009, which really shot him into the stratosphere, became a New York Times bestseller and one of the New Yorker's best books of the year. We got to talk to him to celebrate the arrival of The Magicians Season 2, which is a TV show based on the books, which is airing Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. on 5 Star. We had a chance to get on the phone and chat with him about what it's like seeing the written work being brought to life on screen. We talk about how things have changed from the page to the screen and how he coped with that process of somebody else taking on his work as well. This is the interview with Lev. Hope you really enjoyed this. It's about 15, 20 minutes long. We'll see you afterwards with some air dates and highlights for next week. Hi, Lev.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Thank you for spending a bit of time talking today.
Not at all. It's my pleasure.
You're on to talk a bit about your book and the TV show, which is The Magicians, which just started back in the UK for its second season.
Right.
So first thing I wanted to ask you is, how did you feel when you were first approached about the idea of turning your books into a TV show?
Well, I should clarify, I spent quite a while approaching people.
Oh, right.
I was the aggressor for a while. I spent a few years going around Hollywood talking to people about making a show out of The Magicians because I thought it would be a good idea.
Yeah.
And I talked to a lot of people. You know, there were a couple of places where we actually started developing it, and then for various reasons, it didn't go forward. So when I met with John and Sarah, the showrunners, I'd already done that 5 or 6 times.
Yeah.
The difference with John and Sarah was, it's a little bit inside baseball, as we say in America, but generally it happens, you go to a studio and then they say, okay, we're going to assign some writers to this. The difference with John and Sarah was that they were writers already. So
right.
It was like I was picking the writers who were going to do it. I knew these were people who had a sensibility that was similar to mine. And when I met with them, it was such a relief because I wasn't having to explain everything and explain the books and explain myself. They already knew and they understood what I was trying to do. So, you know, there was a satisfying click when I first met with John and Sarah.
Yeah, I was going to say, given that it's something that, you know, you've created and then you're handing it over to somebody to basically reinterpret your work. How is that process working for you? Because I know you've not directly written any scripts for the show, as far as I can tell.
Yes, that's right. That's correct. Well, it's a good question. Following the satisfying click, there was a lot of angst on my part because I've been a writer my whole life. Writing books, it's a very solitary activity. You know, you write a novel, you really get to call most of the shots yourself.
Yeah.
You write all the dialogue. When you're writing a book, it's like you're directing something. You point the camera, you tell everybody how to do their lines, you dress them up in their costumes. When you get into the world of TV, you surrender all of that control.
Yeah.
Suddenly, there's five people whose job is just to tell you what all the characters are wearing. I'm not used to being told what my characters are wearing. And it was a real adjustment. It was a real adjustment. I'm not used to collaborating. And it took me a while to understand what John and Sarah's sort of... took me a while to understand how you tell stories on TV, which is different from how you tell stories on paper. You know, things that in a novel, you can hold back secrets until the very last pages. You can sort of slow play the reveals, you know, for half the book. Can't really do that on TV. You have to kind of reveal the whole premise early on.
Yeah.
There's lots of stuff like that. I'm not used to actors who will say my lines however they want. It was a real adjustment. And, you know, John and Sarah, it's interesting. I mean, John is an incredibly intelligent, dramatic, funny writer. He doesn't come from a fantasy background. That's right. Not kind of his, what he comes out of. Sarah is much more that background, but a little bit more of a horror person than I am. So, you know, subtle differences start coming out. And I think we all had to kind of feel our way into that.
Given that you're now sort of into the second season, or the second season's airing in the US, has that process got easier? Because I think you've said before in interviews, there were some changes to the storyline you weren't a huge fan of initially. Has it got easier to sort of accept those compromises now you're into a second season?
Oh, completely. I would say the process of acceptance is complete. You know, now I see the show for what it is, which it has its own complete integrity, which is subtly different from the books, and sometimes not so subtly. But what's happened is I've become a huge fan of it, basically.
Yes.
I'm involved with the process. I give a ton of feedback. But I also just get a lot of pleasure from watching it and watching where they take it, which is places that I never could have taken it.
Yeah.
They think of things that I never would have thought of.
Have you ever been tempted to actually write a script for the show?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I find that very tempting. The first season, I was very... it wasn't at first, because I didn't understand screenwriting at all. I would look at these scripts and think, well, so how are they going to make that line work? Or I don't understand how this is going to happen, what it's going to look like on screen. And I've been watching them go from screenplay to finished show. I feel like I'm starting to get how this works. And no question, I find it very tempting to try to take a shot at it. There's a couple of lines in the first season that snuck in that were mine. In a very few occasions, tinkered with the dialogue, and some of it made it on screen. But I want to figure this out, and I actually want to take a shot at it at some point.
Yeah.
Too late for the second, but maybe the third.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be very cool. One of the things that I do, if I know I'm coming on to interview somebody that's got an established fan base out there, I went onto Reddit. I know you did a Reddit Ask Me Anything quite recently, but I went onto Reddit and sort of said, I'm interviewing Lev. Have you got any more questions you'd like to ask him? So some of these questions have come off people on Reddit. There was somebody called Froyo1998 who asked, are there any chance you'd make the fillery books an actual thing? I recently got into the show, and the books, I always thought it'd be cool to be actually be able to read the fillery books themselves.
It's funny. I started the first one. I wrote the first chapter of the first book.
Right.
And I think it's online somewhere. It's kicking around. I couldn't off the top of my head say where it is, but probably some Googling could turn it up. I enjoyed it a lot. The problem is that in some ways the story of the books and the show is the kind of exploding of the myths that are laid out in the books.
Right.
So in a way it would be sort of, it's a little like reversing entropy. The books kind of take apart what Plover built in the fillery books. I would have to sort of not reverse engineer it exactly, but kind of roll back that process. It's very tempting to me because that whole idiom that mid-20th century Narnian idiom, it's very natural to me because it's what I grew up reading.
Right, yeah.
So I'm not going to rule it out. When I wrote that first chapter, the first chapter of The World and the Walls, it was very easy. I tried to throw in a little bit more. It wasn't exactly C.S. Lewis. I tried to throw in a little sort of arch kind of Evelyn Waugh stuff. It was further back. It was First World War stuff also. It was set in the First World War rather than the Second.
Yeah.
I haven't ruled it out, but I've got some of the things I need to take care of first.
Jeff Hampton asked, if you were starting the book series today, is there anything that would be different to what you originally published?
God, the Redditors are they're pretty ruthless. Well, that's a good question. It's a good question. There are individual lines that I regret and would change now.
Yeah.
To turn the phrase or that I thought, I mean, there's literally maybe three or four of them that I think I always think back and think, I would do that different.
Yeah.
I guess the major question, the major question for me, if I'm time traveling and starting the books all over again, is in the show, they tell Quentin's story and Julia's story at the same time. In
right.
the books, they're kind of time shifted. There's the first book has Quentin's story. The second book has Julia's story. They're happening at the same time, but I tell them in different books. It's very interesting the way that the show tells them at the same time. And you can see there's echoes and resonances and symmetries that come out when they do that. I'd be tempted to try it in fiction if I were doing it now. As it happened, I didn't really figure out about Julia, her voice and her story until the second book. But if I were going back, it's interesting the way the show overlaps them, and I might be tempted to do that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to go back and have a print version of what is essentially the sort of inspired by the TV show, which would be an intriguing backwards kind of way of doing it.
No, I need to do like a novelization of the TV show based on the novel, yeah.
This hopefully is a little bit easier. Tyler 7680, where did you come up with the name of Breakbills for the school?
This may be disappointing. I was right when I started the books. I started The Magicians. I was in a part of the country that we call upstate New York, which is north of New York City, where it's quite rural. And it has a really old New England kind of Yankee feel to it. And I wanted a name that it had that kind of slightly portmanteau feel of Hogwarts, but had instead a very, what felt to me like American, maybe a little old Dutch kind of feel to it. And I was in a house that I was borrowing from somebody else. And as you do when you're using somebody else's desk, you look through their mail, which is on their desk without their permission. And there was an address and it was sort of Breakbills Road somewhere or other. And I looked at it and thought, that's rather good. It has some of that sort of hard, flinty, Puritan feel to it, Breakbills.
Yeah.
Let's try that. And if it's bad, I'll fix it later. But then it stuck.
Yeah, it's a great name. I like it. So there was a question from somebody called Noises Art. Said, I would like to ask him whether Welters is inspired by Eschaton from the David Foster Wallace Infinite Jest books, because a lot of people have said how much Breakbills feels like Hogwarts to them, but Breakbills, at least the book version, always felt to me more like a neurotic and full of compulsion and overachievers. It always seemed closer to Enfield Academy with magic than Hogwarts with drugs.
That's a very good question. I'm having like a... That's a really good question, because Infinite Jest was a big book for me. And I used to live there. I used to live in Alston, which is the part of Boston where the Enfield Tennis Academy is.
Right.
I mean, and I'm sure I was like a block or two from where David Foster Wallace put it. That's a really good comparison. And I was very aware of Eschaton. That's so funny.
Interesting.
This is where you realize how little authors know about their work. That's a very good connection. I think it's probably true.
Yeah.
I think it's probably true.
Interesting. Talking of inspirations, Marinox19 asked, how do you think Dungeons & Dragons shaped the generation of writers that you belong to? And how did the game provide roots for the magicians? I don't know whether you're ever a D&D player, but...
I'll cop to that. You know, it's amazing. Sometimes you meet some of these very distinguished literary chaps who've written some very fancy stuff, and scratch the surface, and you find a real D&D nerd. You know, just underneath. A lot of writers that I know played when they were kids. It was especially important for me just because, you know, I was really trying to translate some traditional fantasy narratives and tropes into the idiom of realism. Just think really hard about how this would actually work if we were playing by real world rules. And that's very much what they did in Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, they really took, you know, they took, no one ever, you know, there was no system to Gandalf's magic, for example, or the White Witch's magic.
Yeah.
But they had to figure out, the Dungeons and Dragons guys had to figure out how to, you know, how to emulate it. And figure out on a very, very practical, mundane level how it would work. You know, are you tired after you cast a spell? How long before you can cast another one? What exactly do you need? How long does it take? All that stuff. They ask these questions that nobody had ever asked before.
Yeah.
And when I was writing The Magicians, I found myself asking the same questions. And it was really helpful to have that work. Just the old Dungeons and Dragons rule books, which are, you know, I've basically are permanently engraved in my subconscious now. to have those to build on, it was really essential. It was really essential. I actually can't overstate how important it was to have that stuff to build on.
Awesome. My time is now up, so I shall let you get back to your other interviews today. Hope you have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye. So that was the interview with Lev. Hope you really enjoyed that. As you say, you can go and find The Magicians. It's on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. on 5 Star if you want to go and catch up with season 2 of that. I think season 1 is up on the box sets as well, so you can probably go and watch that too. Next up, we have some air dates and highlights for next week. Kicking off the air date section this week, we have one renewal. Lethal Weapon has been renewed for a second season before it's even started to air over here. It comes up very, very soon. So 3rd of March it comes on over here. Looking forward to that. Have you ever seen the original Lethal Weapon movies? You might be a
it's
bit
weird, because I was in the spare room that I record my podcast in, and I looked to my right and the Lethal Weapon films were actually right next to me.
Oh, really?
So yeah, that's an option if I fancy
should.
It.
You should go and watch them. It's a buddy cop movie. I mean, it's the quintessential American big budget buddy cop films. So it's two police officers who are thrown together that don't really like each other. In this case, it's Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. And the TV version, it's obviously two different actors playing the roles, but the premise is basically the same. So the movie version, Mel Gibson, Danny Glover. Mel Gibson's lost his wife. He's basically suicidal and he's kind of crazy. He plays a character called Martin Riggs, and it opens with Martin jumping off a building, kind of trying to talk down a jumper. And he's paired up with, in the movie cases, it's with Danny Glover playing a character called Roger Murtaugh, who is getting too old for being a police officer, or thinks he's too old for being a police officer, and he's trying to kind of take early retirement. And then he gets matched up with this young, slightly crazy kid who gets him into all sorts of trouble. So they basically take the same sort of premise for the TV show, but there are a few differences in that Damon Wayans plays the Roger Murtaugh character and he's not trying to retire, but he's basically suffered a mild heart attack and they're trying to reduce his stress levels. And then they put him together with Martin Riggs, who again is a slightly suicidal cop. He's lost his wife and he's kind of pushing them all into these kind of all action sequences, basically. So
okay, cool. I think there's three films.
Yeah, there are 4 films in total. They are worth watching, the original films, but you don't need to have seen the films to watch the TV show. The TV show is sort of a reimagining of the movies, but they've tweaked things somewhat and some of the characterizations are a little bit different. I've seen the first 2 episodes of the TV show. It's really, really good. They've done a really nice job with it, as you can tell by the fact that it's got a second season renewal. So, you know, it's going down very well in the US. It starts over here on the 3rd of March. It's on ITV, of all places. It's a sort of rare premium primetime buy of a US network show for ITV. So go and support it. They may do it a bit more.
Okay. I don't know if ITV is a an ideal place for that. They have like clear dramas and stuff like Victoria.
I know what you mean. It's an odd buy for ITV, but they made a big song and dance about the fact that they've done it, and it's something they're trying. It's the first time they bought a major US drama in a very, very long time. But it's very kind of popularist, it's fun, it's action filled. I would advise to go and watch it. I really enjoyed the first couple of episodes. It's funny as well. I think it's worth going to watch. In terms of other changes this week, we've got BattleBots. A number of people have been asking about on the website. We don't have an exact date for season two of that, but it will be coming to Spike at some point in the early part of this year. So I think they're saying sometime before April, they're planning on running that, but we don't know exactly when yet.
Okay, that was pretty good, the first season.
First season of that. It's
and I also heard some good things from American people as well, to say that they liked it. So it was pretty good.
Yeah, it's a bit different to Robot Wars in that the bots are far more varied and far more interesting, and it's a lot more violent as well. So it's a good show. It's if you like Robot Wars, it's less sort of technical in the way that they put it together, or you know, they don't go into as much kind of detail as BBC do on Robot Wars. But it's if you like watching robots beating the hell out of each other, it's worth watching. So
nice.
So Lethal Weapon, as we mentioned, that's on the 3rd of March on ITV at 9 p.m. Go and watch that. There is a new drama called Big Little Lies coming to Sky Atlantic on the 13th of March. That's from David E. Kelly, who is a very well-known American screenwriter. It's starring Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, and Charlene Woodley. It's about conflict, secrets, and betrayals and murder in a tranquil little seaside town in Monterey, California. If you like those sort of dramas, it'll be worth watching. It's a sort of dark comedy drama. It does look quite funny from the trailers and bits and pieces that I've seen. And that's a fairly spectacular cast as well. David E. Kelly does write some really interesting stuff. Ally McBeal is probably the thing he was best known for. But Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman in a TV series. So, you know, that's fairly good start.
Yeah.
Next, we have Vampire Diaries, finally. Part 2 of season 8, which is the final season and the last few episodes of it, is coming to ITV2 on the 15th of March at midnight. So somebody needs to...
for midnight, I guess. Yeah. Vampire stuff.
Yes, somebody needs to explain to ITV just because the show has vampires in it, you don't need to show it in the middle of the night. But... it's back for the final few episodes, which I know a lot of people will be looking forward to. Hopefully people have managed to avoid going to download it and have been patient enough to wait. But Season 8, Part 2, that's on the 15th of March at midnight for Vampire Diaries. Silicon Valley is back in April. Don't have the exact date for that, but Season 3 of that is on Sky Atlantic. Brilliantly, brilliantly funny show. Well worth watching. It's one of the best half-hour comedies on TV right now. Really, really worth watching. So if you've not caught that, go and watch it. American Gods, we've got an air date for as well. Coming to Amazon Prime on the 1st of May. This is the story of the old Norse gods who are living amongst us, and they are battling the new gods, which are sort of gods of media and technology and that sort of stuff. So there is a war between the old and the new. It's based on a Neil Gaiman, very famous Neil Gaiman novel. It looks brilliant. It looks like it's going to be superb. Stars Ricky Whittle from, I'm sure you'll say Hollyoaks.
Yeah, Hollyoaks and The 100.
Yes, The 100, which more people will probably know from. But yes, Hollyoaks and The 100. So yes, doing rather well for himself.
You like testing my Hollyoaks knowledge, don't you?
Yeah. So yes, he's playing the lead. It's got Ian McShane in it as well. And Gillian Anderson as well is also in it. So it's got a really solid cast. It looks fantastic. I will be looking forward to that. But 1st of May on Amazon Prime, American Gods.
Gillian Anderson, one of the Doctor's companions.
No, Gillian.
Or am I thinking of somebody else?
You're thinking of somebody else. Gillian Anderson from X-Files.
Oh, okay.
And the Fool.
The Fool. Yeah. Yes. Okay, I get you now.
So she's in it as well. Next up, we have Gunpowder, which the BBC announced this week. This is starring Game of Thrones' Kit Harington. It's a three-part one-off drama about the infamous plot to blow up the Houses of Parliament. This looks like it could be quite good and interesting. It's what the BBC does best is these sort of little three-part dramas, historical things.
Yeah, they do a lot of them, don't they? BBC like to do sort of three or four, maybe six episodes per show.
They're very good on these little kind of three-part dramas, one-off dramas, so they're doing that. They haven't given officially a date, but if it's not the of November the 5th this year, because they have said it's later this year, so it's going to be November the 5th or at least that weekend, otherwise what's the point? So, you know, yeah, it's going to be Get Round Guy Fawkes Night. Interestingly, the entire premise of it is not based around Guy Fawkes. It's based around the person who, I can't remember the name of the character, but it's the person that actually was the mastermind behind the plot to blow up the Houses of Parliament, which wasn't actually Guy Fawkes, it was somebody else. Should be a good historical drama, I think that, but it's called Gunpowder. It's coming in, I suspect, November the 5th on BBC One. Last of the Changes, Rat Burger, which is an adaptation of David Williams's children's book. It's Sky's big Christmas thing for 2017, so it will be on Christmas Day, I suspect, in December this year, coming to Sky One. It's a children's book, so obviously I really don't know it, but it's a David Williams book. It's very, very popular. It's what Sky has been done a number of times, from sort of adapting Terry Pratchett through to Last Dragon Slayer, which they did last year, and a number of other things as well. So they've made quite a number of these sort of big budget Christmas dramas. So this is the latest of it, of bringing the kind of children's book to life. So that should be quite good. David Williams is actually starring as the lead character in it as well. And it should be a good family drama for Christmas, that one.
Okay. Karen Gillan is the one that I was thinking of.
Oh,
the
yes.
The Doctor's Companion. I had to Google her because I couldn't. Yeah, I had to just clear that.
Yes, sorry. Of course.
You're Karen Gillan.
Yeah. Next week on TV, we have Benidorm is back for its 9th season. That's on ITV. See, that's the sort of thing you expect to find on ITV. That's on the 1st of March at 9 p.m, which is the British sitcom about an all-inclusive hotel in Benidorm. I have to say I've never seen an episode of it because I don't watch that many ITV dramas or comedies.
Yeah, ITV and Channel 5 are probably my least watched channels.
I'm the same.
Channel 4 and Sky are probably the main ones, you know.
Yeah.
Like Fox.
I'm very much the same, but I hear it's very, very good and it's got 9 seasons already, so you know, must be doing
something. I've seen bits and bobs of it and it looks pretty good.
Sure, it's quite funny. So ITV 1st of March at 9 p.m. That is Quantico, season 2 of that, coming to Alibi on the 2nd of March at 9 p.m. I really love the first season of that. I know it's the second season hasn't done amazingly well in the ratings in the US, so I don't know whether it's going to make it to a third, but I really enjoyed that. I thought it was really good. It opens with a double bill as well. That's Quantico season 2 on Alibi on the 2nd of March at 9 p.m. Prime Suspect 1973. This is a prequel to the hugely, hugely popular Prime Suspect. That's coming on the 2nd of March at 9 p.m. on ITV. Again, I've never seen a single episode of Prime Suspect, so there you go. Lethal Weapon, as we mentioned, that's coming on 3rd of March at 9 p.m. Robot Wars, the other show about large robots beating the hell out of each other, that returns for a second season of its kind of newest incarnation. That's coming on the 5th of March at 7 p.m.
This Saturday, this Sunday?
Yes, that's this Sunday, which will then be followed. So that's Robot Wars, 7 p.m. on Sunday. That's going to be followed by Top Gear, which is back for its 24th season. And that's going to be at 8 p.m. That's going to have Matt LeBlanc, Chris Harris, and Rory Reid take over the reins as the three main presenters. I think that should be really good. I've got quite high hopes for this working this time around.
Is Matt the host of that? Or do they not really have a host?
You know how they set it up before where it was Clarkson, Hammond, and May? It's basically Matt LeBlanc, Chris Harris, and Rory Reid are the three main hosts now.
Okay.
So that's how they're running it. And they were certainly the strongest people from last season. So I think that's the right setup. And I've got high hopes for this working this time around. Because if this doesn't work, then Top Gear has some serious problems. Mm-hmm. So I think hopefully this will be good.
There's always Grand Tour.
Yes. Grand Tour? Yeah, there is always Grand Tour. But I do want this to work for the BBC. I want them to have a Top Gear that is fun and funny and works well. So we'll see how it goes. I'm very glad they've got rid of Chris Evans, because he was the most annoying thing on that show.
What's he doing now?
No TV. He's back to doing his BBC breakfast show, I think. I don't think he's back on TV. So,
oh, okay.
So he's back to the radio, which is a good place for him, because I can avoid him there. So, Fifth of March at 8 PM on BBC Two, Top Gear season 24, that returns.
I understand people that say there's nothing on TV. Like, really?
Really? I know. I'm struggling to actually record all the things onto the Skybox at the moment. There is a lot of stuff on TV right now. So there's no excuse not having something to watch, definitely.
I mean, even things like things that have been on in the past, things that you're catching up with, things that you're watching weekly. Whenever someone says, oh, there's nothing on tonight, I'm like, really?
Yeah.
I think you should get a freebie box and a Netflix and Now TV, and then back me later.
Yeah, as you said before, if you will never ever be short of something to watch. If you got
Netflix, adding a lot of stuff. Like, I've been on there because, of course, I've been watching House of Cards, and I don't know if it's new stuff or things that they are advertising that's new-ish, but I've seen like a new thing advertised on there almost every time I've gone on there. So
Netflix they're
diving into some films and stuff now that they're doing. As well. So, I mean, they've been doing it for a while, but they're doing more of those. So, yes.
Netflix have a phenomenal amount of stuff on. And as we've said before, for the price of a standard Sky subscription, you can get Netflix, Amazon Prime, and a Now TV box. So, you know, there is no excuse not to have something to watch right now.
And then next month, they've got Iron Fist, and they've got Netflix's Love. I don't know if you saw that. Did you see that?
Yeah, Love. That's
on Netflix.
I haven't.
They're almost around the same day, actually. They might be but those two are coming on as well, so
and you've still got, like, you will have Designated Survivor coming back. You've got you've got Travelers, if you've not seen that already. That's on Netflix. That's a fantastic series. There is a lot of really good stuff on and Riverdale. You've got a lot of really good stuff on Netflix to watch. And, you know, if you can get an Amazon account as well, you've got things like Sneaky Pete and Man in the High Castle and Grand Tour. There's some great stuff out there on the streaming services.
I mean, I don't watch everything, but I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of options out there.
You should never be short of something to watch at this point, I think, is what we're saying.
Yes.
All right, so that's everything we have for this week. If you want to find out more throughout the week, you can go to geektime.co.uk and see all the latest airdate information and the latest TV news as well. Come and check the front page. We've got loads of new stories going up. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, you can email podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye bye.
Bye-bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.